This is KRFY 88.5 Ponderé.
This is the Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center with current avalanche conditions for the Selkirk, Cabinet, and Bitterroot Mountains on Monday, January 26th. The avalanche danger for today is low. Prolonged high pressure and cool temperatures has resulted in generally safe avalanche conditions across the entire forecast region. It has been 14 days since we have received any measurable snowfall, and at least 12 days since the last reported avalanche. Today's weather will continue the pattern, being mostly clear and cold, with morning low temperatures moderating from teens to mid-20s under mostly sunny skies. Winds are forecasted to remain breezy across upper elevation terrain and ridgelines. By Wednesday, the pattern starts to look more active as the persistent ridge of high pressure finally starts to break down. As of right now, Thursday and Friday have the highest chances of measurable mountain snowfall. For the full forecast, visit IdahoPanhandleAvalanche.org.
Good morning. Welcome to the morning show here on 88.5 KRFY. I'm today's host, Chris Bessler, and we have a, I like to think, superb show coming for you today. We have two folks from the library. We have Amy Flint. She's the president of the library board, the East Bonner County Library. Amy, thank you for being here.
Great to be here.
And we have Vanessa Velez. She is the director of the East Bonner County Library.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having us.
Yes. Thank you for being here again. And we actually have a kind of an announcement. It's not a secret, but I don't think anybody, any other local media have covered this yet. And it's kind of a big deal at the library. And I'm going to leave folks hanging in suspense for just a couple of minutes. We're going to come back to that while I tell you a little bit about what's going on around town. We're actually having internet issues here. But I can see from my phone that our weather today was actually calling for snow. I didn't see snow out there yet. 100% chance of snow and rain today. We have a low of 28, high of 35. On Thursday, more of the same. Low of 32, high of 37. Friday, more of the same. 35 degrees and 41 degrees. High chance of snow or rain on those days. For the weekend, we'll go into some those classic gray, cloudy days that we love so much around here. But that's the weather forecast. I don't see snow in the 10-day forecast after these next 3 days. So for the folks that like to ski and snowboard, hopefully we get a nice little covering of snow there. And I wanted to mention a couple things going on around town here. Give me a second to bring it up. There's live theater happening at the Panada this weekend, starting on Friday, and then on Saturday and Sunday both. They actually have a matinee on Sunday. It's Cheaper by the Dozen. That's a play by Honey Pearl Productions. I bet both of my guests have read that book, Cheaper by the Dozen.
I have not, sadly. Uh-huh. But I might be seeing teaser scenes at the Rotary Lunch today.
Okay. Yeah, that might be cool. Yeah. Amy, you've read it?
I don't know if I've read it. I think there was a movie many years ago. But yes, it rings a bell. I'm familiar with the plot.
It was a book, and it was about a family that had 12 kids. That's the dozen part. And back in the, I don't know, probably the 30s, Depression era. And it was a cool book to read, but it always resonated with me because my mom had 13 brothers and sisters.
Wow.
Yeah, it was, they had big families back in the day. Other things going on around town, Natural Connections is taking over the library on Saturday, January 31st with a full day of hands-on learning, practical tips, and inspiring film. It runs from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and maybe our guests can tell us a little bit more about that. There's also a free lacrosse clinic happening at the Sandpoint Middle School on Saturday. It's perfect for first-timers, the curious, and returning players alike. So if you're interested in lacrosse, and I think it's for youth, I don't know if it's for adults. It's probably for kids. But you can check out the details on that, the other events I've mentioned, and a ton more, because there's actually a couple dozen things going on around town this next week, on our website, krfy.org, and click to the community calendars there. It's provided by Sandpoint Online. And with that, let's get on to the topic today. Again, we're speaking with two folks from the East Bonner County Library, Director Vanessa Velez and Board President Amy Flint. And there's kind of a big thing coming up at the library. Can I just turn it over to you, Vanessa, and you can tell us what this big thing is?
Well, we sent out a press release yesterday, so you won't be the only exclusive for much longer. But the board did approve an expansion design at its last meeting, and we are hoping to move forward with a 4,500 square foot addition on the northwest corner of the building. The bottom half of that, the first floor, is going to be a large meeting room and a smaller sort of cafe style meeting room, hopefully with some Friends of the Library materials or a mini bookstore situation. And then upstairs is going to be an expanded lifelong learning center with more tutoring rooms as well as quiet study rooms for the public.
So this is along the west side of the building, is it?
Yeah, yeah. Essentially, so, the one chunk of lawn left.
Okay, back behind the current building.
No, it's as you walk in, if you're facing the front doors, directly to the right.
Directly to the right, yeah.
There's currently a fountain and a tree.
Okay.
The fountain will be relocated.
Well, so tell us about the genesis of this. I mean, Amy, you could jump in on that. Why is the library doing this big expansion? How are you funding it? Give us some good details on it.
Well, the good news is we are funding it from reserve monies that have been accumulating for many, many years.
Get a little closer to the mic. Yeah. Okay.
It's not going to have a tax impact, and we're not going to be asking for community donations or anything like that. We already have the funds in place.
Well, we'll always take donations.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah.
And we've just once again outgrown our space.
Well, that's indicative of how much the community loves the
it
library.
It is. And when you incorporate things like the Library of Things, that takes a fair amount of space.
Right, yeah.
To have objects that can be checked out.
Yeah, like, I mean, what are some of the types of things people can check out of the Library of Things? So I think some folks are not familiar with that.
Oh, gosh, you can check out guitars. You can check out birding backpacks. We have light therapy lamps now for the dark, dreary days of a Sandpoint winter. We have mini projectors for checkout, drawing tablets. I'm going to leave off the
metal
coolest things.
Yeah,
metal detectors. Telehealth kits. Oh my gosh.
Where does that stuff come from? Is that like donated to the
library? No, we actually don't generally accept donations for the Library of Things. We want to make sure everything's in good shape and not just take whatever randomness. We'll make sure things are high quality and are going to last long. So we purchase it out of collection money. We have a collection budget for it.
And it's kind of based on, we've had six requests for a certain sort of thing.
Yeah, partly based on what other libraries have accumulated in their Library of Things collection. They're very community-based, so certain libraries will have a lot of cooking equipment. Other libraries lend artwork. Other libraries lend power tools. We have focused on recreational equipment and things that maybe people will just need for a short time to explore something or finish a project. For example, we have a digital I can't remember what it's called exactly, but you can digitize old slides and photo negatives and things like that. And usually once you have acquired that tool and done your project, you don't really need it anymore. Right, so right. It's one of those things just to save people money so yeah. they don't have to buy those things for themselves.
Particularly things that might have just occasional use.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or even short term, we have balance bikes for children. And those little ones without pedals, little scooter bikes. And, you know, kids outgrow those really fast. So there's almost no need to buy your own if you're just going to let your kid toddle around on it for a few weeks here and there and then maybe get your own. It's another way for people to test things out also. You know, try before you buy.
Mm-hmm. Other libraries are doing this as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, some libraries have incredibly extensive things, collections. We're on the smaller end of it, I would say, from the collections I've seen. But what I do like about these is they do tend to be very community-based. So an urban library in a city where people live in apartment buildings and maybe don't have space to have tools, the way people do around here is going to have more of that, you know, even borrowing like a drill set. Whereas around here, you know, every other house probably owns something like that. So it's very individualized, which I do like.
Yeah, people here are self-reliant in many respects.
Yeah.
So hang on a second. My phone needs to be silenced.
I was so worried about that.
So it looks like with this expansion that you're really serving kind of an educational need.
Yes, that's a big part of it. Libraries, of course, started as educational spaces, sort of the universities of the people, and they still serve that purpose. But another strong function is as gathering places. And what we found in our meeting rooms is that they're often completely full and we can't fulfill all the requests for meeting space. If people didn't care when they met and were willing to just take whatever time slot was available, you know, that wouldn't be an issue. But I think over the course of a 3-month period last year, we had to reject about 100 meeting room requests just for lack of space.
Because they were already booked up for the particular days and times people wanted. Yeah,
exactly. So part of that is going to accommodate more space for meeting. And also for small group studies, we'll have a couple of rooms for like homeschool groups or just people doing tutoring in small groups where, you know, maybe they're going to be talking and they don't want to be in the middle of the library to disturb others, but they also need a sort of private place to be able to do that. And yeah, and so we can also have more programs without booting other meeting room users. Mm-hmm. So kind of a win-win, hopefully.
So when did the idea or the proposal to do an expansion first surface, if you will?
Well,
because it wasn't just a few years ago that we built the meeting room.
Almost 10 years. 2017 was the genesis. Yeah, I know. Time does fly. And then, of course, there's the whole COVID hole. But the first floor of the expansion that we're considering now was actually intended to be part of that 2017 expansion. They removed that aspect of the design due to funding at the time. And so when we started to explore moving forward with that, with completing that project, the architects suggested we go up another story and just maximize what we could. You know, building costs are only going up. So doing it now, doing as much as we can, as soon as we can, is going to save us money in the long run.
Mm-hmm. And how was the idea received by the board? I mean, the board's obviously concerned about fiscal responsibility.
Right. Yeah. I think two of the board members are on the facilities committee. So we kind of understood what was brewing. And I think the whole board, it was not a shock for the board. And we identified the need probably 18 months ago. I don't know, Vanessa, how long?
At least. At least a couple 18 years.
Yeah.
You walk around and all the tables are full.
Yeah. And so since we had the funds in place, it was kind of a no-brainer for the board. It's like, this is not coming out of taxpayers' pockets, and we're not asking for community support to do this. And I think it's the best use of those extra funds we have to expand the library.
And when is the what's the schedule for this?
We're hoping to go to bid in a couple of months. So the architects are working on the bid documents now. And the timing of that is so construction companies can plan their season. So hopefully by the end of the winter, early spring, before, you know, groundbreaking is possible, they can get the bids in and get us on their radar if that's, you know, the winning bid is going to go to the lowest bid. So we don't really have much choice there, unfortunately, but
it needs to go to the lowest qualified bidder.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And that could be, they say, well, we really can't start on this until next year. Is that a possibility?
Unlikely, because they would want to be bidding out for this coming season. So, I mean, if it were to be next year, it would be hard for them to estimate costs, I think, accurately, because of the, you know, materials price fluctuation. And even our architects warned us that if we waited, there would be, you know, a cost escalation. So I don't think that we're hoping to wait for groundbreaking next year. I think it would be this year if it's going to move forward.
Well, one thing, when I learned of the expansion to meet demand for library services, I was curious about, so I don't know how libraries exactly measure their use through statistics, but can you tell us about how the library does measure up in terms of the number of library card holders we might have here, the number of in-person versus virtual visits, those sorts of things.
Yeah. We're a pretty busy library, especially compared with a lot of libraries of similar size across the state. So we have a regular library card holder base of about 25,000 people. And last year we saw at least 15,000, a little over 15,000 individual people walk through the doors of the library. So we can track circulation, we can track movement through the doors, we can track new cards given. So we gave 2,400 new cards last year alone. And checkouts last year were over 470,000 items. So we checked out, well, if we want to be specific, 474,193 items last year alone. So we have a big collection, we have a popular collection, and we have enough programs and enough going on in the library that there's just constant flow of traffic.
So 25,000 cardholders, and our population here is
In Bonner County? Under 40,000. Well, we're only East Bonner, technically.
Right. That's right.
So it's a little less than the entire county. We are the more populous side of the county, but we're looking at about between 37 and 40,000.
Yeah. So over half the people here hold library cards.
Yeah.
How does that sort of statistic compare with others, library districts around the state? Because it seems pretty high.
It's a mixed bag. We also give cards to non-residents. So some of those card holders are people who are only here part-time. We know we have a lot of seasonal, you know, I guess residents, as you would say, part-timers, snowbirds. And other library systems might just automatically give cards to everyone in their district or the city if they're city-based. So each library is pretty individual in the way that it distributes cards. Mm-hmm. They generally give free cards out to tax-paying citizens. We have a universal card program where we allow certain privileges for people who aren't necessarily residents but spend enough time here and are, you know, paying into the district through their sales tax and maybe just renting temporarily but not enough to be a resident. So we offer that as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, does the have these numbers been going up steadily?
They've
been climbing.
Yeah.
How about what is happening in the virtual world? People accessing your services through the website.
Yeah, those numbers have gone up as well. We have, I believe, we have superseded the numbers of like e-audiobooks, so digital audiobooks, checked out versus physical audiobooks, which are, you know, audiobooks on CD. Some people still call them books on tape. Drives me nuts. But they're, and that's the concept.
Tape, that's so old, yeah. Well,
we don't have tape, but yeah, it's the concept. It's books on audio. But the digital versions of those have become more popular. But the physical versions of our books are still more popular than the digital versions. But we are seeing a massive increase in that. And COVID was a huge part of that increase. But also, I think just the convenience and the apps getting easier to use and more people understanding how to use their smartphones or getting, you know, specific tablets or whatever, it just makes it easier.
So can you describe how people would check out a book online?
Yeah.
And how long do they get to keep it? It's, they don't get to keep it forever.
No, it's, and that's actually another benefit, because you don't get any fines because they essentially return themselves automatically. So there's two major apps for ebooks and e-audiobooks, Libby and Hoopla. And you can start on the library website, but you can also just go straight to the apps if you're starting off of a tablet or your smartphone.
Yeah.
So you just plug in the information for our library. Usually you search via zip code. You can search East Bonner County Library. They want you to authenticate with your card number, so you do have to have a library card to start it out. And put in your PIN, and then after that, you shouldn't really have to do that again. It'll save your credentials, and then it's really just the touch of a button or a virtual tap on a screen to check out, put holds on things, and yeah, then they just automatically return themselves.
It's actually, I hate to say it, a pretty good way to read a book.
Yeah.
Because yeah. On your tablet, you can carry a whole library's worth.
Exactly. Yeah. When I'm traveling, I really like to have my little tablet. But otherwise, I enjoy physical books as well. But every now and then when I'm dragging a giant book around, I wish it was on my Kindle.
So are there other trends that library are seeing right now? I mean, libraries have been under tremendous change since the internet mm-hmm. came along. Yeah, and the thing that occurs to me right now, AI is now a thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you mm-hmm. actually can't even avoid it anymore. Yeah. If you go online yeah. and you make a search on Google, it's probably going to default to an AI response yeah. to that. Are there any projections in the library world about how AI might affect libraries?
Yeah. So the biggest issue we're actually dealing with right now is AI-generated content. Books coming out that aren't clearly labeled as not being written by an actual human being. And it's not always that obvious. And people even request them sometimes. And after doing some research and trying to find out who is the author of this book, and then finding out that it's literally some AI-generated thing full of errors, and that's actually one of the biggest issues in libraries right now, trying to keep that slop off our shelves.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's kind of hard to distinguish some of these, too.
Yeah, I mean, just from the covers and the descriptions that are usually okay, and you can't see inside them until you get the item in your hand and then see how poorly made
yeah.
it is.
Yeah, it's kind of remarkable, actually, what AI can do, but it can generate a full-length novel in minutes.
Yes.
In literally
yes.
minutes. If the user sketches out, like, here's what I want the plot to be,
yep.
and here's who the characters are,
yes,
and click the button, and bang, you have
yeah.
a book.
Yeah,
it's remarkable in some ways and disconcerting in many ways.
Yes.
Well, let's talk about, since we got you here, Board President Amy Flint. Let's talk about library governance. How does the board interact with the professional staff you have?
Actually, the primary way that board members interact with staff is through the various committees that we all participate in. For example, I'm on the facilities committee, which is why I was involved in the preliminary steps necessary to do this expansion. And I'm also on the policy committee, so we regularly review our policies and typically either eliminate them if they're no longer necessary or revise them so that they're more accurately reflect the current mm-hmm. current situations. I think we do have some board members who also do volunteer. One of our board members is the president of the Friends of the Library. And so she has that connection as well. And then we have several board members, I think, who also volunteer. So they're actually working with staff, maybe working on shelving books. In my case, I've done some lifelong learning center volunteering. So there's just a variety of ways. But we pretty much trust Vanessa to be managing staff. And so the board does not really get involved in that arena. But we do interact with staff. Mm-hmm. Just kind of by default through the committees and volunteer efforts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I got to think it's really helpful when your board members will do things like volunteer at the library, and they really kind of see the day-to-day operations and really understand what the library, how it operates better. So, and you don't have any seats up for election this year?
No, next year, 2027.
Mm-hmm.
Both Janine and I will be up, and I'm not sure.
Uh-oh.
I mean, by then I will have been served for 12 years.
Oh,
now, the law has changed about the duration of your term.
Yeah, they're 4 years now.
But I'm grandfathered in, so I'm on the end of my second six-year term.
Okay. They were six-year terms. Now they're 4 years.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, 6 years is a pretty big commitment, actually.
It is.
So is
12.
Yeah, so is 12, yes, yes. And anybody that lives within the library district can run for a board seat. Are the board meetings, do you guys Zoom those, or how are those available for people?
Well, we do have a Zoom link available for the meetings, but typically we meet in person at the library the second Monday of the month at 4 o'clock.
And
of course that's a community that's open to the community.
Just curious how many people show up, and they're just community members.
You know, it depends on what's happening. Lately it's been pretty quiet at our board meetings, but for a while there I think we had an occasion or two where we had to open up the meeting room and have
a couple of years ago.
You know, that was during the whole COVID.
With the COVID, when people were complaining about.
But I think we've gotten to the point now where things are pretty quiet, and we would welcome having more community participate. But our meetings, I guess, maybe aren't that exciting, and there's no points of contention right now that are going to draw people to the meeting so they can have their 3 minutes of fame and speak their piece. You know.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, this is the 88.5 KRFY Morning Show, and we're talking with Amy Flint, Board President at the East Bonner County Library, and Vanessa Velez, the Library Director. And the big announcement today, if you missed it about 20 minutes ago, is that the library is about to engage on a big expansion, about, I think you said 4,400 square feet?
Yeah, about 4,500, so 4,500. A little expansion.
Well,
compared to the last one.
Yeah, compared to the last one, yeah. But that's still a pretty significant project for the library to undertake.
Yeah.
And it's nice to know that you have the funding in place for that.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be going back to the taxpayers in the district say, hey, give us more money.
We're not looking to pass a bond or do some heavy fundraising, but we do always accept donations.
Yeah.
And this is primarily funded through donations.
Yes. And so you do have major donors?
Not really. We have people who significantly donate, I would say, let's say $1,000 or something like that on maybe an annual basis. More for a tag. We don't have large donors specifically for this fund. We do have certain donors who, like the Gilmore family, has been extremely significant in providing funding for a lot of children's related services, and they also donated the funds for the fountain. And so we're working together to get that relocated.
Mm-hmm. But. Yes. Well, I think it's indicative that people value the library. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're always surprised at how generous people are. When the Friends of the Library offered their $5,000 matching grant at the end of the year, we superseded that three times over. So that was a welcome surprise.
Well, we still have a little bit of time. I thought it might be interesting to talk about some programs that, like the Library of Things that we discussed a little earlier, that people may not know happen at the library. One that occurs to me, there's actually, I think there's a seed library.
Yeah, actually the seed library just found a new location. It's still on the first floor, but it's much more visible as you walk in. It's much closer to the circulation desk, sort of right in front of the information desk and the circulation desk. So it used to be a bit around the corner next to the elevator, so it's a little easier to see. And we are doing a lot of programs related to seeds and seed saving because it's sharing. It fits in with the library's ethos of, you know, sharing community resources, but also sustainability and that DIY feeling that we have in this area. There's no need to buy a genetically engineered or, let's say, patented seed, you know, that you're not even allowed to save because it's literally owned by a company, when you could be saving the seeds of a crop that you know grows well in our environment. And that's really what we're trying to create, that resilience for this community.
So it's a library, but obviously you can't bring the seeds back. Do you have to bring back seeds from the plants you grow?
That's the idea, is take some, bring some. So, of course, you don't bring the same exact seeds. So in a sense, you're not – you could say you're borrowing them, because if you grow something from the seeds that you've borrowed from the library and then harvest seeds from those crops and donate them back – I mean, that would be the ideal cycle. We do have a little bit of trouble getting people to bring the seeds back. And so that's a big part of the push with the seed programs, is just demystifying the process and sharing the information of which seeds you can save and which, you know, might accidentally hybridize, et cetera. So there's all kinds of nuances. But we do offer a lot of education about that.
I imagine vegetables and flowers are probably the big ones.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Do you not have any idea how many different kinds of species or varieties you have
in the
library?
I do not. Dozens and dozens.
Yeah. So if somebody had a really neat, kind of unique plant that they've had success growing here, they can bring some in and say, hey, other people ought to try this.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can just donate by putting them straight into the seed packs and, you know, giving us some basic information about what it is. And, I mean, we cannot accept patented or hybridized seeds, so there is that component as well. But we wouldn't want those anyway. But it is also, you know, a legal thing for us. And we have programs where people can meet each other and even just talk to others and get education that way. We had a really great seed swap this past Saturday during the indoor farmers market, and that was super well attended. And I heard from a couple of people who said they learned a lot.
Yeah. How did that event go?
It was fantastic. Did you go, Amy, this time?
No, I didn't. But I know I heard from a lot of people in the community how much they appreciate the fact that the library is hosting, I think, three through the winter.
Four. One more in February.
Oh, great.
Yep. Valentine's Day.
Everybody loves it.
And so this time of year, they're obviously not selling produce.
Well, there's root vegetables and... Yeah, no, I actually saw a decent amount. There was carrots and parsnips and, excuse me. And there's certain farms that have, you know, greenhouses and hothouses and stuff and can grow all through the season.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool. And you had a good turnout?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very well attended. Almost so well attended that we can't actually count. We just have to estimate based on the number of people walking through the door that day because the rooms get so full.
Yeah, yeah. Well, again, it goes to how important the library is as a meeting place, a community gathering place for us. Other programs you have, now, there is a community garden on site there.
Yes.
Yeah, that's really cool. Tell us about what function does that serve?
Yeah, so the garden is primarily an educational space. It's also just a place of relaxation and beauty, so we're trying to make sure it's attractive for people to just spend time there, sit, eat their lunch, meet people, but also learn about plants that are native and grow well here. All of our landscaping is our native plants, and we also use it for educational programs. So there will be seed saving programs. We've done composting programs. We've done growing and harvesting programs. So we're not exactly like a food generator, because it's not really big enough to be that, but we do use we use youth space for educational aspects. And there was also, there's a Monarch way station set up. And there was fantastic.
Monarch Butterfly.
Yeah, Monarch Butterflies. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And there was a really cool program last year where we had the caterpillars and in a tent turning into chrysalis and then literally hatching as monarchs, and people were able to watch that whole process, and that was really special.
I have to mention, if you can hear this, you're probably not hearing it via the internet because our internet provider, Intermex, is down system-wide, we think, and we might be actually having problems with our broadcast as well. So we will have the podcast for this on our website a bit later today. If you missed part of this or you want to let somebody know who usually listens by streaming, we will have the entire program there on our website. And sorry about that, but we are...
Circumstances beyond
our control with the internet, that's for sure.
That'll happen.
Well, how about tutoring programs? That's a really vital service that the library has, I think.
Yeah, the Lifelong Learning Center is something that is relatively unique to our library. We offer tutoring for all ages and practically all subjects, as well as tech tutoring if people need help with learning how to use their technological devices. And sometimes that just requires someone sitting down and going through the process, and other times it does involve a little bit of research and troubleshooting. But with the academic tutoring, we use a couple of well-respected reading curriculums to help with literacy. And there's also tutoring involving, literally all kinds of subjects. Math is a big one, especially at the grade school and middle school level. But we've also done tutoring for citizenship classes and foreign languages. We do test proctoring in that department, so people don't have to, let's say, maybe even drive down a Coeur d'Alene to get a test officially proctored. If they're taking online courses, you know, finishing a degree program. So there's all kinds of things. And the need has increased. I think also with the increase of homeschooling and alternative schooling in this area, there's always opportunity for more one-on-one interaction.
And you must maintain like a database of certain experts in subject matter. So if somebody came in and said, hey, I need help on a, you know, maybe math.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of the program is they're all volunteers. We have one paid Lifelong Learning Center coordinator on staff, and he really manages all the volunteers and the training and the schedules and special programs for that department. But so Amy is one of our Lifelong Learning Center volunteers. Ginny Nash, another trustee, also tutors. And it's huge to have members of the public contribute in that way. And it's also, I mean, it's beneficial for everyone volunteering. You know, there's a lot of information out there about how beneficial that is, just increasing connectivity and connection, which is another part of our mission. So it really dovetails nicely.
Mm. What do you teach, Amy, as a tutor?
I'm language arts. Having been an English professor in my career mm-hmm. before I retired. But, you know, sometimes you get some unusual ones. I tutored a student once, an adult, who had never gotten his driver's license.
Oh, really?
So I supported him in studying the rules of the road, and he passed and finally got his driver's license after probably driving illegally for a number of years.
Oh, right, yeah.
But
thank you, Amy.
Yeah, I mean, just that there's all kinds of requests for all kinds of assistance, but I think it's primarily language arts and math.
Yeah. And are you finding people that are you know, have actually literacy problems? They're almost illiterate. Can you go that deep with people? And I don't know if that's an issue.
That tends to be a situation only when someone has relocated here and English is not their primary language. Mm-hmm. But we
Well, there is such a thing as, and I'm far from the expert on this, but functional illiteracy, where even adults who have managed to get by have maybe a fourth grade reading level, and it does hinder them.
Sorry about that. Okay. All kinds of things going on here today. Between the internet being down, I think Radiologic may be having a problem. Our broadcast is affected. Again, I don't even know who out there could hear this at the moment, but we will have the podcast posted up on our website.
Well, we're having a nice conversation.
Conversation into the microphones. It's not exactly the kind of conversation you have in your living room. But well, what else do you want folks to know about the library while you got the microphone here?
Well, I would say, well, the secret's out. If you've been to the library or spent any time there, you know how many opportunities we have. But I would also say, if you haven't been to the library, to check it out. I can't even count the number of times I've talked to people who either haven't been or haven't been in several years and are just absolutely shocked at the number of things that we offer. You know, not only the size and diversity of the collections, but the programs, just the opportunities for learning, browsing, meeting people. It's massive. I think, yeah, there's a lot people don't know about. I mean, we host an open mic program. So that's Evans Brothers next Saturday. We'll do an offsite open mic. We're trying to get more in the community at Evans Brothers. Yeah.
Is that for music or spoken word or
anything? Anything if you want to share. And I think the nice part of library programs is there's not maybe a ton of opportunities to do things like that, social events that are well put together and nice that aren't maybe like in a bar or that you're not expected to spend money. So all library events are free. And of course, you know, that's huge for our community, giving back to the community in that way, but also just making things accessible for people.
Okay.
And I just have to add that whenever I travel anywhere, I always visit the local library. And for a community of our size, we are absolutely amazing. I mean, Boston Public Library aside, because that place is also a museum, you know. Yeah. But communities that are much larger than ours often don't have the library activities going or the space. And so I think we're pretty impressive.
Yeah. You know, I was kind of on the fence about the library building when they built it, because I loved the old federal building where used to be housed. Were we both living here then?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was not. I just missed it.
Amy, I was like, I don't want to move it out of the federal building because it has so much charm, but you can see with the library we have now how the library has flourished because it has room to grow and literally expand.
Yeah. I've heard from people, from old library staff, or previous library staff, I shouldn't say old, but who worked in that building, and they said it was a bit of a nightmare logistically.
Yeah. I think you had to go down to the basement to get some books.
Yes. Yes. It was tight. And not really designed, for what it was being used for.
But
yeah,
it's a beautiful building, and I'm really happy that McDuff's did the renovations.
It's a really nice renovation. Yeah.
So, well, anything else you want to throw out there to your listening public?
I did want to throw out a plug for the database that we're highlighting this month. So every month we're trying to highlight a new database. That's another thing. If people don't have the time or inclination to visit us in person, but if you do have a library card, I would highly suggest checking out the digital library. We consider the website almost a fourth branch of the library, along with, you know, Sandpoint, Clark Fork, and the Bookmobile, because there are so many resources there. Of course, you can read, listen to audiobooks, but you can also do a ton of research. You can watch TV, movies. We have a Canopy app that's really cool. You know, no need to pay for all these streaming services. But this month we're highlighting Newsbank, which is a digital newspaper database, and also includes the Daily Bee and the Idaho Statesman. So you can get the digital version of the Daily Bee on the Newsbank service. So I would highly recommend people check that out.
Mm-hmm. And at this point in the program, I was going to rattle off some of the upcoming events, because there's always upcoming events, but I don't have internet. to tell those. I don't know if you have a particular event.
I can go into, yeah, well, Natural Connections, which you mentioned, is this Saturday from 10 to 4. And it's always a series of programs that are themed. And so the lineup this Saturday is at 10 a.m. There's a Soil Sprouting for Everyone program to learn how to grow fresh, nutrient-dense greens with minimal effort, and it's taught by master gardeners and food safety advisors. And then at 12, there's a Fire Prevention for the Home program. That's presented by the Sandpoint Firefighters. At 1 o'clock, there is a Planning for a Bountiful Harvest. Even though it's almost February, it's never too early, as all gardeners know, to start planning the garden. And Emily from Red Wheelbarrow Produce will be presenting that. So she's got a ton of experience. And at 3 p.m., we are showing a documentary called Seed, the Untold Story. And this is about seed keepers. And so it learns, shares information about why it's important to save seeds. I mean, that's kind of the first part of it. The how is something we've also covered, but I think the why is important for people to understand as well. And then we'll also be sharing some seeds from the seed library with attendees to take home. So 10 to 4 this Saturday at the library in Sandpoint.
Okay. We'll look for that and then go to ebonnerlibrary.org and you can see all the stuff that's coming up and a lot of the stuff we talked about today and connect up virtually that way. And with that, I guess I'm going to say thank you to Amy Flint, the president of the board of the East Bonner County Library, and Vanessa Velez, the director. I appreciate you coming in. And
thank you for having us, Chris. Yeah,
thank you,
breaking
Chris.
Some news here for us.
Thank you.
All right.
And for anybody that might still be listening, because we don't know what's happening with our internet and broadcast, we're going to go out with a song by John Hartford, Steam Powered Aeroplane. And I'm playing that just because I like it.
Wow, I'm going to go out to my car and see if KRF will hire something.